Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
My next guest, Ken Go of the Oregonian, has covered just about everything at the Oregonian, and he does it well. Pac-12, track and field, football, basketball, baseball, everything in between. Best of all, he's a great human being, and he's joining us now. Ken, first of all, set the scene where you are in the state, and give us an idea of the air conditions and what you've been through.
Yeah, we live in Oak Grove, John, which is just north of Oregon City, sort of between Oregon City and Milwaukee. The air conditions are miserable. It looks like a heavy fog outside my window, almost like a pea fog, really hard to see through. You go outside, the air smells like a stale campfire.
Have you seen anything like this? I mean, you've been here a while, and I'm sure there have been wildfires in your time, but how unusual is this?
Yeah, I have never seen anything like this. I mean, we've had smoke before, but where I live is Clackamas County. We're in a level one evacuation status, which is a little frightening, and we're not that far from Oregon City, which is a level two. So, nothing like that has happened. The only thing I can remember back in the 1980s, back before you were born, there were periodic ice storms here. We haven't had one like that recently, but it would be a sort of a freezing rain. It would come down and it would coat branches and power lines, and they would crash, and you'd be without power, and the lines would be across the road, and sort of a scary situation there for different reasons, but you didn't worry about breathing the air then. And so I can't remember anything like this.
Ken Go of the Oregonian is with us. What advice do you give to people? Because, you know, I on one hand, I consider myself a journalist, media member, and so I'm trying to just follow sort of the protocol. On the other hand, I'm a father and a husband, and I see anxious people around me and little eyes that are wondering what's going on. How do you sort of approach this as you see the information coming down?
Well, I think the most important thing is to check your sources of information and to go to places that are trustworthy and credible. There's a lot of misinformation out there on social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, and stuff like that. And don't believe necessarily those unless you know the source and trust the source. My brother's cousin heard that. That's always a danger sign to me. That's not something you should believe. If the Oregonian says it, if KGW or COIN or KTU or any of the local TV stations say it, if OPB says it, if a radio station with a strong news presence says it, then I think you can feel reasonably safe that the information you're getting is accurate. But there's a lot of rumors and misinformation going around out there, too, which I think only adds to the level of panic. Don't trust those.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because I am annoyed with that. I'm annoyed that even yesterday on the show, I had people who were calling in, you know, saying, here's what happened. There were arrests made. And I was like, wait a minute. Hold on. You can't just say that. Like, why do you think that misinformation has become such a thing and everybody wanting to politicize or maybe put their cause behind an event like this that we all maybe should just be in it to make sure people are okay?
Yeah, no, I think there's two things there. One, I think those kind of rumors and wild misinformation based on what somebody told somebody else that told somebody else that knows somebody else, those have always been out there, but they haven't had the social media megaphone that we've got now. So you couldn't get that information and run straight to Facebook and put it out and say, this is what I heard. So you have that. And then your other point, I think, is a really good one, we're really divided politically, and people have dug in, and it seems like every current event is looked at through the prism of how will this help my political cause or candidate. And so anything that you think will help it, you immediately accept, and anything that you think is detrimental to what you believe in, you immediately reject. And so people staking out some pretty indefensible positions just because they align with their political philosophy, which is a scary thing, I think. You have to if we're going to have our system of government work the way it's expected to work and was designed to work, we have to have some sort of common information that we can all trust. Now, we can draw different interpretations based on that information, but we have to agree on the information. And if we can't do that, then we have no ability to compromise or come to any sort of consensus about what ought to be done.
That's a great point. And I'm struck, too, as I have watched this kind of unfold with everybody sort of viewing it through the prism of their own experience or their own agenda, that this has existed in sports in the last 20 or 30 years with the unhinged, diehard fans who have been unwilling to kind of see the big picture and everything has to be viewed. You know, we've had Oregon fans who will get upset at something that Oregon State is doing. But you know damn well that if Oregon were doing it, that the Oregon State fan, it would just be a flip-flop, a role reversal.
Yeah, and to an extent, I think that's always existed. But there's a level of anger now that I don't recall. I mean, as you point out, I've been around for a long time, and I've worked in the business here for a long time. And Oregon State fans, to give one example, would have a lot of good-natured joshing and back and forth about their school and their student body and their teams. But it was good-natured for the most part. Now, sometimes, not in all cases, but sometimes there's a level of anger right below the surface that I don't recall seeing before. And I find it just a little disconcerting. I mean, we're basically all people, and we basically all want the same things. And we want our teams to win, sure, but before there wasn't a level of hatred for the other team.
Ken Goh of the Oregonian here. Initially, the state of Oregon, the Oregon Office of Emergency Management, said that 500,000 residents had been evacuated. Brad Schmidt and Mark Friesen of the Oregonian had sort of fact-checked that. The Governor Kate Brown acknowledged today that the number of evacuees is closer to 40,000, not 500,000. You've seen the Oregonian when it merged with the Oregon Journal all the way through this time. You've been a part of it. I'm incredibly proud when I see a story like that and Brad Schmidt, Mark Friesen keeping the state officials honest.
Yeah, you know, I think as a region, we can be really proud of the work the Oregonian has done on the fires, and also all the different events that have unfolded. This has been an unprecedented year for the number of sort of cataclysmic things that can happen. And I think the Oregonian, some of my coworkers and news site reporters that have been out, for instance, covering the protests night after night after night, putting themselves in harm's way, being vilified by both sides of the political spectrum and by the police and by the protesters, and still going back out there and doing the job and doing it honestly and objectively and giving people the facts about what's happening as opposed to somebody's political idea of as we said earlier, you know, what's going to make their side of the agenda and what they believe sound better.
Ken Goh of the Oregonian is with us. You've got a case with Ryan Day, the coach at Ohio State, who came out and blistered the Big Ten conference yesterday saying, you know, why can't our players play? Was Ryan Day right to address it in the way he did? B, does he have a point there? Did he not get that answer from the Big Ten?
Well, you know, the situation's unfolding in real time, right? I've been very supportive of both the Pac-12 and the Big Ten for choosing not to play immediately based on the information they had and the fears they had, not only about the disease and the possibility of people dying of the disease, but also of long-term health consequences, myocarditis, potentially fatal heart problem, lung and respiratory problems that can linger long after you, quote-unquote, recover. The New York Times yesterday had a story about the way that COVID-19 interacts in some people's brains that possibly can leave these people with long-standing neurological problems. And I think both the Pac-12 and the Big Ten took all those factors into consideration and understood what they didn't understand and said, this isn't a risk worth taking. Now, other conferences have made a different calculation, and they're playing. And it may turn out that those conferences gambled and won. But I still think the Big Ten and the Pac-12 operating on what they knew made the best decision for the health and well-being of their athletes and staff members and coaches in real time. And you know, time will tell whether the Pac-12 and the Big Ten made an unnecessarily cautious decision or made a decision that was the best they could make and actually turned out to be the best decision. I mean, we just don't know yet.
The University of Oregon has had three players, including Panay Sewell, who say they're opting out. If they do play, let's say they even play late November, early December, they get going, and Oregon has to field a team that is, you know, shorthanded, two defensive players not with them, left tackle not with them, and they're good but not great. How will we frame this season for Mario Cristobal?
Well, I think it needs an asterisk, not just for Mario Cristobal, but for everybody. I mean, there's nothing about it that's been normal. Even the conferences that are playing are doing it under, you know, weird and strange circumstances, and that hopefully the kind of circumstances we're never going to have again. Everything from schedule to the testing protocols. You know, the teams have played games this year where they haven't had an entire position group, which to me is another element of danger to the guys playing the game. You know, if the position group that's out is offensive line, and then how do you protect the people the offensive line is supposed to be blocking for? So I think every coach needs an asterisk this year. I don't think it's fair to judge anybody by what happens this year on the field, including Mario Cristobal, who's, for my money, has done a very good job as coach. He's recruited better than I can remember any Oregon coach ever recruiting. And in years past, a lot of that was because some disadvantages Oregon had in facilities and funding. Those disadvantages are gone now. And Cristobal has done a great job at maximizing the advantages he has. I think they could still be pretty good, even with the people they've lost, because he has recruited really well, and they have good players. And maybe their depth won't be quite as good, but in a shortened season, depth isn't going to matter quite as much. So, I think the Oregon season might still be pretty good, winning if it's played. And two, if it's not, I think he gets a pass because who could have predicted all this?
Ken Go of the Oregonian. You stay safe, my friend, and breathe some clean air.
Yeah, you too, John.
All right, Ken Go. I appreciate him joining the show with all of his expertise. I've got some updates statewide coming up. You can still give right now to the Wildlife Family Fund by going to baldfacetruth.org. Those donations will get to families in your community who are in need. O'clock hour will be electric. Anna will be joining us. Steve at Fox Sports Eugene will be popping on. I'll give my three predictions for the NFL season. I want to thank Daniel Erickson for a donation to the Wildlife Family Fund. If you want to give to the Wildlife Family Fund, you can go to baldfacetruth.org. I want to thank Jeff Cato for his donation. I want to thank Will Ayers for a donation. I want to thank Brian Greninger for a donation, Lars Jacobson for a donation, Pete Charleston, thank you for your donation to the Wildlife family fun. Mark Waldrop, thank you, a longtime donor of the BFT Foundation who has made a donation. Lisa Kunau, I thank you for your donation as well. And Bill Marquard, thank you. And John Dillon, thank you so much. Andy Belts as well. Thank you guys for supporting families in our state. Donations up to $1,000 will be matched. You heard that at the start of the show today, that you have until 3 o'clock to do that if you haven't already made a donation. There is no amount that is too small, no donation too small. We're just trying to help some families that are facing unimaginable turn of events here. Like, you know, I saw Merritt Paulson, the owner of the Timbers and the Thorns, tweeted out a little while ago about, you know, he says he went biblical here. You've got plagues, you've got a fire. You know, what else is coming along here? When the locusts show up, Judah, I'm out. Like, you know, yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
yep. Signs of the times, my friends. It's interesting.
Yeah. At that point, I'll be like, you know what? Signing off. No, I will be here for you doing this radio show. And we have been all along. I want you to leave it here. 2 o'clock hours coming up. We're going to start it with the 2 at 2. I'll give you my predictions for the NFL. Steve from Fox Sports Eugene and Anna will be popping on. Leave it right here. You got the BFT.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.